So we are connecting this morning with Carmen Colon, and Carmen is the vice president of the Bridgeport YMCA. She oversees the Alpha Community Services there and the Bridgeport YMCA. And I am excited to have her here because I know in recent news stories, and many of you have called in concerned about it, we've been hearing about the homeless populations in Bridgeport. And this isn't new. There's been an issue with the homeless, I think, in Bridgeport for quite some time. But recent stories have shown these pop-up tent communities. There was one that was forming. It was torn down a couple of days later, according to news reports. We've heard of people who are living under the bridges that are connected to I-95. So many of you have seen them, and we know local churches have tried to help them. So Carmen, we're kind of checking in with this morning to kind of get a better snapshot of what's going on in Bridgeport. She is not with the city of Bridgeport, but she'll, you know, partner with them, work with them on this ongoing issue. So good morning, Carmen. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Good morning, Melissa, and good morning to those listening to WICC this morning. I am a listener of WICC, and I love listening to Melissa in the morning. So thank you so much for having me here this morning.
Well, I appreciate that, Carmen. Thank you so much. No, I'm excited to have you here. I know that I had met you once before. I never had the opportunity of having you on the show, but I think this is a topic that I know impacts a lot of people, and mostly from the heart. A lot of people who their hearts go out to people who are, especially as we go into the colder months, are worried about them. And so I think this is a topic that many people want to talk about. First of all, could you give us kind of a snapshot of where Bridgeport is at with the homeless population? Are we par for the course this year? Are we in worse shape? Are we doing better? What can you tell us?
Well, definitely, Melissa. And actually, you know, the issue of homelessness and housing insecurity, because that's exactly what it is something that's very dear to my heart. I have been with the YMCA movement doing this specific work, working with the homeless population for now November 28 years. Wow. Therefore, I know a thing or two about how to deal with the homeless population. And I do have to say that the issue of homelessness is not getting worse. It's definitely not getting worse. Obviously, we do have a lot of housing insecurity because there is lack of housing. After the pandemic and all that, we did have an inflow of individuals that moved into the state of Connecticut from New York City. Therefore, we are lacking housing. We do have great services that have been put together over the course of the years. We have realigned amazing resources to be able to help with housing insecurity. Nevertheless, it's still an issue. We have a great partnership with our city of Bridgeport. We work with their health department because the lack of housing and people being homeless is a health crisis. That's exactly what it is. Therefore, we work closely with the health department. We work closely with the mayor's office. We have the best commissioner of the Department of Housing in the state of Connecticut that we could ever imagine, Zayla Mosqueda Bruno, who's a partner with all the cities in the state of Connecticut. She's very in tune with what's needed here in our city. Therefore, I know that many people, when they go into other states and other communities, they see people, homeless people, lying all over their streets in major cities. We don't have that here, right? And it's not by accident. It's because of the work that Opening Doors Fairfield County does here within the city of Bridgeport and beyond, Fairfield, Stanford, et cetera. So we do have all these resources in place. Now, what I urge, you know, those people that have these housing insecurities to do is to continue to call 211, to contact us directly at Alpha Community Services YMCA, to seek our assistance at our South End Community Center. That's what we did open up the warming center early this year. We opened up on November 1st. We were due to open on the 15th, but we opened early because we, you know, obviously have seen these encampments, and this is something that we don't want for anyone. We want to make sure that we are working with them and providing those needed services. When people come to us, we do have social workers that work with them to make sure that we're meeting their needs. And housing first is the model that we use. So we, our social workers, are working with them to try to get them permanently housed. Shelter living is not the way to live. Therefore, we are working very hard to get everyone permanently housed.
So there was a lot that you said there, Carmen, that I kind of want to unpack a couple of things. First of all, you had said in there, no, it's a good thing. It's good. I was writing notes as you were talking, because I think you went over a lot of great information that I don't know if people really realize. So I want to unpack a couple of points there. First of all, you had said that we are not in worse shape, which is, I think, a good thing. That's a good thing to take away. When you look at other cities, I know we were in Baltimore not that long ago, and you're right. There are literally people lining the streets who are homeless, and that is not the case here in Bridgeport, Connecticut. So that is another takeaway I think that people should be aware of. But you said we've seen an influx of people who just don't have housing. So back to the tent cities, there was one that had kind of popped up a couple weeks ago, and days later it was shut down. Why not allow for the tent city to stay up until more permanent housing can be available to them, or shelters could be opening up for them?
Well, because we do have the services to be able to shelter them. We do have places that folks can come in. They don't have to live out on the streets. It is very dangerous to live in a tent city. I mean, anything can occur to these individuals. And we do know that when the weather gets colder, they are going to try to seek our assistance. So we want them to seek our assistance now. We do have, from all the other service agencies that are part of Opening Doors Fairfield County, we have outreach workers that go there and engage with the population to make sure that we're working with them to get them into permanent housing. If we don't know about them and they're living out there on the streets and in tents and under highways and, you know, all of that, then we can't have social workers work with them and get them document ready. By document ready, what I mean is that we need to make sure that we can get them identifications, birth certificates, whatever they need, so we can be able to get them into permanent homes, permanent apartments. So we have to be able to give them that assistance. And if we're not working with them, we can't give them the assistance. Again, we do have resources to be able to assist folks that are out there.
We're chatting this morning with Carmen Colon, who is the vice president of the Bridgeport YMCA, overseeing the Alpha Community Services at the Y. And we're talking about the homeless population because Carmen has worked in this realm for over 20 years. And she directly sees the resources that are being that are made available to people who are homeless in Bridgeport and trying to connect them accurately to those resources. So, coming back to this, Carmen, I know you had said we have so many resources available to people. So if that's the case, I understand that we as humans are terrible at asking for help. I know myself, I'm horrible at it. And I fail to ask, you know, when I need somebody to babysit my son. I like struggle to ask my mom, who I know would love to take him. Like, I get it. I get that we are not good at asking for help. But you'd rather freeze, like you'd rather sit in a tent. I'm not trying to be rude about it, but if you know that there are free resources available and people are coming out and saying, hey, we can help you, we can help you, why doesn't everybody take the help?
I think that one of the things that sometimes happens is that, you know, folks think that it's overnight, right? That you're going to be able to get into a permanent apartment overnight. And it does take a little time. You know, it can take 2 to 3 months to be able to get into a permanent apartment. But you will get there. That's the whole thing. You have to start somewhere to be able to get there. And allowing our social workers to work with the individual, to work with you, to work with the families. We can get you there and we can be able to assist with getting you into subsidized housing. We have a great partnership with our local housing authority, Park City Communities. Our executive director there, Jillian Baldwin, is a great partner of ours and continues to work, and her staff work with us to make sure that individuals that cannot afford to pay for their own apartments and all that, that we can get them into subsidized housing. But again, folks have to come to us and allow us to be able to work with them. And it's not something that is a miracle and that's going to happen 2 seconds later, but it does happen. We just celebrated one of our staff that from 2020, August of 2020 to date, she has housed 103 families in permanent apartments.
Wow.
Most of them subsidized. That is a huge, huge statistic.
That's a big deal.
Therefore,
I
urge people, allow us to work with you. It's not going to be overnight. It's not going to be 2 seconds later, but it will happen. it will happen. All of us that know that, you know, when we're looking for apartments and that kind of stuff, it takes a while, right? And also, one of the things that we have to realize is that when we're looking for apartments, you're going to need first month rent, security deposit, 2 months rent. So now when we're talking about rents for 2 month apartments around here, they're up to like $1,800, $1,400. Mm-hmm. You do the math, right? So now you're going to take, you know, a good $6,000 to get into a new apartment. So it is really, really high. But those individuals that don't have those financial resources, come to us, allow us to do the work that we do, and we can help you. We definitely can help you.
And the other thing, Carmen, just it's something that I recognized in working with the Bridgeport Rescue Mission, for example, that we're seeing I think they've more than doubled the amount of meals that they're offering per week in the last year, because we're seeing people even in the middle class not being able to afford things like food or their rent. And so I was wondering, from your perspective, are we seeing the homeless population also include people who are like living in their cars and just can't afford their rent, or have been evicted, or just can't make ends meet? Are we seeing that happening?
We are seeing all of that. We are seeing all of that. But again, I have to say that we do have resources for that. No, we do have people that are coming to us that are saying, you know, I'm getting evicted. So we do have eviction prevention funding that we can help out with. The earlier folks come to us and reach out to us, the better it is, because that way we can have a mediation with your landlord. We can say, hey, let's get onto a payment plan, that type of stuff, and we can help out. I mean, there are rules and regulations with everything, because I know a lot of people say, you know, I have five dogs, and now I'm getting evicted because I have five dogs. So there's also stuff that we need to be able to talk to, you know, folks about. You know, sometimes, you know, we can't have five animals. We might be able to have one, but not five. So there are these things that I also like to mention, because these are some of the things that also are causing evictions. It's not always just because somebody might not have the resources. There are other things. There's also mental health issues that play into this, and our social workers can work with individuals that have the mental health issues, because they need a lot of help, and we want to make sure that we are here to assist everyone that needs that help.
So, Carmen, I think the last question is, how do people reach you guys if they want that help?
Absolutely. So folks can come directly to 650 Park Avenue. That's where our warming center is. Folks can call 211. Please make sure that folks are calling 211, because everyone that comes to us has to go through the Coordinated Access Network. That's the CAN system of opening doors Fairfield County. That's the same system that the entire state of Connecticut uses. And all of the data then is managed through our HMIS system. It's the Homeless Management Information System that's used through the state of Connecticut. Folks can also go onto our website at Alpha Community Services, YMCA. They can go there. They can find us. And, you know, I always, it's not a secret. I tell people, listen, I give my cell phone number out to folks because I'd rather somebody contact me and know me and be able to reach me so that I can be able to give the assistance that they need. So there's a listener out there that needs your help. They can reach me at 203-260-0595, 203-260-0595 for more information.
Carmen, I really appreciate that you're a resource now with WICC. I would love to have you back on the show whenever possible, and I thank you so much for the work that you do.
Thank you. Thank you, Melissa. And any listener, please make sure that, you know, reach out to folks. If you know somebody that's experiencing homelessness or about to experience homelessness, please reach out to us. We can assist.
Thank you again. Carmen Colon here on WICC.
For those that have done so much for us, supporting our veterans. Now on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
I want to welcome to the show this morning Tito Ortega, who is a case manager for Homes for the Brave. Good morning to you, Tito. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. So first of all, Tito, when you see case manager, that could mean a couple of different things. So explain to people who are listening, what is it that you do?
So for me at Host of the Braves, I try to do my best to educate the client as to kind of like what the process is and a lot of the things that they may not understand about how the decisions are made through the criteria. I try to do my best to help them in everything they need assistance in, and I treat it kind of like a walk-in clinic where if I can do anything in 72 hours for them, then I'll keep them for that long. If not, I'll try to give them the best resources I have or the best agency that I know in the local area that can help assist them with their barrier.
So give us an example. When you say like their barrier or whatever they're struggling with, what do you mean? Like give us an example.
So a lot of veterans come out, and for the National Guard, there's one particular problem that we have where there's no federal active time. And to kind of assist with veterans who have that barrier, they can't qualify for certain things that the VA gives. So I try to find agencies through the State Department to whereas the civilian side will be able to assist them with those areas that the VA can't find.
Now, Tito, correct me if I'm wrong, because it was so nice to meet you a few weeks ago. You served our country, didn't you? Aren't you a veteran?
I am. I served for 8 years. I was a two-time combat veteran, Iraq, Afghanistan, and I have a meal under my belt as well.
Well, thank you so much for your service. Really, really appreciate you, obviously. Tito, what made you want to be a case manager then representing veterans? Did you yourself have any of these issues when you came back from service?
Yeah, so when I was getting out, there was no real guidance as to how to understand how to reintegrate into the civilian mindset. And that was very difficult for me and my family to handle at first. But through time and through understanding of the process and the system, I was able to manage to kind of like overcome the barriers that I see these other veterans going through. And through that process and that experience is what allows me to understand how to help the following veterans.
So Tito Ortega is here this morning, a case manager for Homes for the Brave. And Tito, what would you say are some of the most common issues brought to your desk from veterans?
Most common, I would say, a lot of the service connections and benefits that veterans don't think they rate or don't think they qualify for because they don't understand how that time or federal active time works. So a lot of them go years without applying for benefits or even without getting the health care benefit, not knowing that they qualify for it.
So it's interesting that you basically kind of, I don't want to say handhold, but you introduce some things to a lot of the times they just had no idea that they qualify for. What does that kind of say then about the state of Connecticut or just in general how ill-informed we make it? Like the fact that veterans come back and they aren't told this right out of the gate, like almost like a welcome home packet. I hate to say it that way, but do you know what I'm getting at? Like we're obviously lacking in making these resources not only readily available, but just letting them know that they have these resources. It seems like we're not doing a good job of that.
Yeah, and for me, it took a while to find a lot of the resources because you have to go out and look. Like you're saying, not a lot of people are advertising them and putting them up for us to understand or even hear them, because so a lot of times the homeless community doesn't have that privilege to be able to have a radio or a TV on hand all the time. So it's kind of difficult to kind of get that message across. But I feel like it's a connection of both. When you're in the military, it's kind of taboo to talk about getting out, kind of taboo to talk about your health and things like that, because you got to be the tough guy. So once you get out, it's kind of like, should I even bother searching for this? So yeah, I believe it's a mixture of both not being informed and not looking for it once you get out.
How did you personally find the resources you need after you came back?
I had great support. My spouse was a huge support for me. She motivated me as well. She's also a veteran. And she understood a lot of the process of what it took to get out of the military. So she sat down and explained it to me, and I just followed the process.
Wow. What would you suggest? What could we do to better that gap of people just not knowing what's available to them?
I would say providing more support and helping that veteran follow through with that goal or that process. A lot of the times we give up because we don't understand fully what it is that's being asked of us. And that frustrates I know me, a lot of the times when I'm not understanding and I can't figure out how to end that process or how to get to that end line, and you just end up walking away from it. Only one step to go.
Mm-hmm. Tito, any idea, first of all, how long have you been with Homes for the Brave doing this work?
A little under a year. I've enjoyed every moment of it. They've given me the privilege to be able to assist in any way I can, and that's something that I've always wanted to do, and try to find an agency that allowed you to do that. So I'm extremely happy where I'm at.
Ballpark, you don't have to give me an exact number, but Tito, how many veterans do you think you've helped since being in this role?
Since being in this role, I would say a good 15 to 20 so far solid veterans that I've been able to talk to and assist, and at least get rid of one of their barriers throughout the day.
That's amazing. Well, Tito, please keep up the work that you're doing. And I last question for people who come to see you at Homes for the Brave. Are your services free?
Absolutely. As long as you're a veteran, you're a family of a veteran, there's no charge for any services that we provide. And it's a nonprofit organization, so it's one of those things, as long as we have the support, we'll be able to maintain that service.
Well, Tito, we appreciate the service that you do. Tito Ortega, who is himself a veteran, and your wife, thank you both for serving our country. And Tito is a case manager for Homes for the Brave, just trying to connect the dots and help bring veterans to the resources that they so deserve, and many of them don't even realize are there for them in their corner. If you want to learn more, you can go to homesforthebrave.org. Again, homesforthebrave.org. Tito, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. That is Tito Ortega here again on WICC. I am excited to welcome to the show this morning James Geisler, who is the Executive Director of Counseling and Student Wellness Services at Sacred Heart University. And we're talking this morning about a new program. It's called You at SHU. Good morning, James. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So I have this incredible intern who started working with me in August, and she, her name is Isabella. I've introduced her a couple of times to my listeners, and she was telling me ahead of midterms and everything going on, and she had a recent death in the family. She also got sick at one point. She said, "I'm really stressed, and I'm just so grateful that my school has this program." And so I said to her, "Well, what is it?" And she goes, "Oh, it's brand new, actually, and I wish more schools offered it, because I talked to other, you know, other friends of mine in Connecticut or even in other states, and they don't have something like this." And I'm like, "Well, I want to interview someone at your school." So I was very excited that she connected us together, James. So talk to us first of all a little bit about what You at SHU is.
Yeah, so You at SHU is an online platform. It's confidential, 24/7. Students can access it every day throughout the year. But it's a wellness platform, and essentially it focuses on three pillars of wellness: thrive, success, and matter. So really focusing on how to manage stress, anxiety, and all the emotions that comes with college, how to engage in a work-life balance, but then also how to make meaningful connections on campus. And so those kind of pillars that are offered allow students to access over 2,500 evidence-based resources, set their goals, and engage in self-assessment. So it's really a personalized platform for students to kind of have wellness at their fingertips.
So how long has this program been around, James?
So we actually purchased it through a grant from the Connecticut Campus Mental Health Program in the spring, and it actually just launched on the first day of classes here at Sacred Heart. So really super fresh since August.
I mean, are you already seeing success with it? Is it too early to tell?
I mean, I look at the stats and I look at how often they go up, but we're shy of 1,000 logins right now. And that's a lot, 1,000 logins across Sacred Heart University. We rolled it out in our first year experience class for all first year students who often struggle the most. So I would say right now it's looking fairly successful.
You know, talk to us a little bit about more of a generalized scope of what we're seeing on college campuses, if you don't mind, not just in Connecticut, but across the country. I know, James, we focus a lot on post-pandemic mental health for younger people. And from your professional standpoint, what are we seeing with college students?
Across our country right now, we're seeing high levels of anxiety. most certainly. I think that's number one. Everyone asks me probably on a daily basis at this point, you know, is it really the pandemic? And my response is always, I don't think the pandemic helped at all. If you look at the CDC data, even 2019 pre-pandemic, the mental health issues in our country with adults were already going up and on the rise. And, you know, most counselors really weren't too surprised that you throw in isolation, uncertainty about the future, lack of social connections and opportunities. It's almost the perfect storm. So I wouldn't say it's the cause, but it certainly didn't help.
But do you think it brought more awareness to an underlying issue? So, like, for example, I didn't even ask you this, James, so I apologize. How long have you been in, whether it's this role or you've just been working in counseling in general?
Yeah, I mean, I've been working in counseling since 2015. I actually started my career at Sacred Heart University as a practicum and internship student, but I've been in the director role now for 2 years at Sacred Heart.
Okay, so from your professional standpoint, do you think that the pandemic, all it kind of did was really highlight an underlying issue? Because, you know, when you talk about things like anxiety or stress, I know when I was a college student over a decade ago, these were things that plagued my classmates, even myself at points, where you felt like if I can't manage it, what am I going to do? Do I binge drink? Do I fall into a depression? Do I go to the, I mean, I can remember kids going to our local hospital because they'd have mental breakdowns. And you didn't call it that. You just said, oh, they're really overstressed. So do you think that the pandemic at least highlighted, though, something that it sounds like it didn't cause, but was an underlying issue for a long time on college campuses?
I absolutely agree. I think you've made a couple of great points. I think it definitely accelerated things, to say the least. But, you know, the pandemic was something we all went through, right? So even prior to the pandemic, if you weren't struggling with something, the topic of mental health was still not widely talked about. But the fact that we all went through the pandemic together, we all had different experiences, highlighted the fact that we were all struggling, and it really normalized the conversations around anxiety, stress, depression, you name it. So, yeah, I think there's several ways of looking at it, for sure.
So, again, we're talking to James Geisler this morning, who's the Executive Director of Counseling and Student Wellness Services at Sacred Heart University. And there's this new program. It's called You at SHU. And it's really helping many students just on that campus alone to really address maybe some underlying health issues, mental health issues that they are struggling with. And even that term mental health, I know, still has stigma around it. It's interesting because mm-hmm. I will sometimes say, I find there are times where I have to get my mental health in check. And you see 9 out of 10 times, James, I will look at the person across from me and they have that, oh my gosh, look on their face. Yeah. And I think to myself, okay, but that includes anxiety. And I'm sorry, but anyone who says they've never experienced anxiety is just lying. Stress, that's also included. So, you know, when we say mental health, I don't want people to think we're talking about a bunch of kids just kind of going out the deep end. You know, things like anxiety and stress, that seems to be one of the top things we find, not just at college campuses, but even in the workplace. So why Sacred Heart University, James? I mean, is this something that other schools have put into place, other colleges? Why was this a priority for Sacred Heart?
Yeah, so, I mean, U at SHU is really part of the U at College platform. The U at College platform tailors it to the school. I don't know of another school who purchased the U at College initiative here in Connecticut. I think different schools, just even across our country, will figure out how do we tackle the mental health crisis across universities. Some will say, let's hire out to third-party vendors to maybe hire more counselors and maybe more programming for individual counseling services. The way I look at it is we can certainly do that. We can certainly hire more and more counselors through different programs, online, virtual, after hours, et cetera. But what is the issue? Does that really fix the issue? And what we're finding is that right now, early intervention and prevention is where we want to spend our energy, because if you think about it, counseling is very reactive, right? Like, students struggle and then we see them. But what if we stayed ahead of that? What if we gave students the resources at their fingertips so that if they got into an obstacle, they can navigate it themselves without having to get to that point? And really, that's where we want to put our time and focus. And that's really everything from the outreach services that we've done this year on campus, tabling and talking to students on campus, to really make sure that they're checking in on their mental health, just like they would their physical health. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
James is the executive director of counseling and student wellness services at Sacred Heart University. And we learned that they invested in a program that it sounds like, James, it's a nationwide program, you at college. So I've never even heard of that. So thank you for telling us about it. And it sounds like as of now, unless I hear from another college in Connecticut, SHU is the only one that has this program in place as of this year. It's called You at SHU. And could you walk us through, James? So let's say I'm an incoming student. Okay. I'm an incoming student at Sacred Heart. I fall on times where either, I'll take my intern, for example, who had a death in the family that was kind of unexpected, or at one time she was sick for a week and had to miss classes, fell behind. These are very common things, not to mention if kids have jobs, if they've got, drama in a relationship they're in, whatever it may be, or even trying to apply for a future career after graduation. And they are living on campus and they're going to college and they're feeling that stress, that anxiety, they're feeling that mental, emotional instability right now. How does You at SHU work? Walk me through what I would do.
Yeah. So for students, it's a single sign-on. So there's nothing complicated about the fact that they go to u.sacredheart.edu and the single sign-on allows them to enter into their personalized portal. So basically how it starts is those three pillars that I talked about, thrive, success, and matter, really guide the student to navigate basically their own self-awareness for their wellness. So they engage in what we call self-checks. So they click either thrive, success, and matter, and they answer a bunch of questions related to their wellness in that category. Maybe it's depression, maybe it's anxiety, physical health, sleep, body image, meaningful connections on campus. And they answer a bunch of questions, and then their answers now prompt basically a dashboard of their wellness that allows them to set goals for themselves, engage in further assessments, but then also be attached to not only tons of resources on campus, but also nationwide. And maybe it's skills or mindfulness, maybe it's articles even about anxiety so that they can educate themselves about what they're struggling with to help normalize what they're going through. But, it's really, it's a pretty big program. The platform is huge.
And it sounds like you said again that it's anonymous.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely confidential. Yep. So even in my dashboard as an administrator, I can see how many people logged in, and I know whether or not kind of what the demographics in terms of their identity, but there's no names associated with it. So this is strictly confidential and personalized to the student with their single sign-on.
I know you said that you've seen almost 1,000 sign-ons just this year, which is when it got started, and we're only in November, so that's pretty substantial. Have you gotten any feedback from any of the students?
Well, certainly your intern's feedback was great to hear. At tabling events, we host tabling events and talk to students about this. I think the majority of the feedback came from our first year experience course. So we have over 70 sections of first year experience courses for all of our incoming first year students. And all the instructors and staff who teach the first year experience course walk students through this so that they are at least aware of how to log in. And the feedback that we got from that was really positive. So I think that's where the majority of our feedback came. And that's really where students are most vulnerable in the beginning, not really making many connections here in a very new world to them. And, to hear that feedback right from the beginning is good. Hopefully they take it with them through the rest of the school year.
Yeah, it's a really great point. And hopefully, if we have other people listening this morning, especially if they have students who go to Connecticut schools, or if you go to schools outside of Connecticut, as I mentioned, all of my siblings and I, because we grew up, we were born and raised in Connecticut, we kind of wanted a little bit of breathing room from our parents, so we left the state. But if you have students who go to schools outside of Connecticut and their colleges are not offering something like this, you should check out this program. I think it sounds like a really great thing to have, a great resource. I know our state funded this, but it's You at College, and it was adopted by Sacred Heart University, You at SHU, which is now offered to our local students right here in Connecticut. So I thank you so much, James, for talking to us about this and for sharing all the information this morning and for what you do at Sacred Heart. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Again, James Geisler is the Executive Director of Counseling and Student Wellness Services at Sacred Heart University. And again, the program is called You at SHU, which is pretty fitting, Sacred Heart University SHU.
Yeah.
The national program is You at College, which is pretty neat. So thanks again, James. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.